Chapter 15. The FBI always gets its man. In the science fiction section of the Glen Park branch of the San Francisco Public Library, not far from his apartment, Ross William Ulbricht was engaged in an online customer support chat for the company he owned. At the time, October of 2013, the person on the other end of the internet chat thought he was talking to the site's admin, who went by the internet name of Dread Pirate Roberts, a name taken from the movie The Princess Bride. Roberts, also known as DPR, was in fact Ross Ulbricht, not only the admin but also the owner of Silk Road, an online drug emporium, and as such was the subject of a federal manhunt. Ulbricht frequently used public Wi-Fi locations, such as the library, for his work. Perhaps under the mistaken impression that the FBI, should it ever identify him as DPR, would never conduct a raid in a public place. On that day, however, the person with whom Ulbricht was chatting happened to be an undercover FBI agent. Running an online drug emporium in which customers could order cocaine and heroin and a wide range of designer drugs anonymously required a certain moxie. The site was hosted on the dark web and was only accessible through Tor. The site only took Bitcoin as payment, and the creator of Silk Road had been careful, but not careful enough. A few months before Ulbricht sat in the San Francisco Public Library with the FBI circling him, an unlikely hero connected with the federal manhunt came forward with evidence tying Ulbricht to DPR. The hero, an IRS agent named Gary Alford, had been reading up on Silk Road and its origins, and in the evenings he had been running advanced Google searches to see what he could find. One of the earliest mentions of Silk Road he found was from 2011. Someone who went by the name Altoid had been talking it up in a chat group. Since Silk Road had not yet launched, Alford figured that Altoid most likely had inside knowledge of the operation. Naturally, Alford started a search for other references. He struck gold. Apparently, Altoid had posted a question to another chat group, but had deleted the original message. Alford pulled up a response to the now-deleted query that contained the original message. In that message, Altoid said that if anyone could answer his question, that person could contact him at rossulbricht@gmail.com. It was not the last time that slip-up would be made. There were other posted questions, one to a site called Stack Overflow. The original question had been sent in from rossulbricht@gmail.com, but then, remarkably, the sender's name had been changed to DPR. Rule number one about being invisible: you can't ever link your anonymous online persona with your real-world persona. You just can't. There were other linkages established after that. Ulbricht, like DPR, espoused Ron Paul free market libertarian philosophies, and at one point, Ulbricht had even ordered a set of false IDs, driver's licenses in different names from various states, which drew federal authorities to his doorstep in San Francisco in July of 2013. But at that time, the authorities had no idea they were talking with DPR. Slowly, the evidence grew so compelling that one morning in October of 2013, as soon as DPR's customer support chat began, federal agents began quietly entering the Glen Park Library. Then, in a surgical strike, they seized Ulbricht before he could shut down his laptop. Had he shut it down, certain key evidence would have been destroyed. As it was, they were able to photograph the system administration screens for a site called Silk Road moments after the arrest and thereby establish a concrete link between Ulbricht, Dread Pirate Roberts, and Silk Road, thus ending any future hope of anonymity. On that October morning in Glen Park, Ulbricht was logged in to Silk Road as an administrator, and the FBI knew that because they had been observing his machine logging onto the internet. But what if he could have faked his location? What if he wasn't in the library at all, but using a proxy server instead? In the summer of 2015, researcher Ben Caudill of Rhino Security announced that not only would he be speaking at DEF CON 23 about his new device, ProxyHam, he would also be selling it at cost, around $200, in the DEF CON vendor's room. Then, approximately 1 week later, Caudill announced that his talk was canceled and that all existing Proxyham units would be destroyed. He offered no further explanation. Talks at major security conferences get pulled for various reasons. Either the companies whose products are being discussed or the federal government puts pressure on researchers to not go public. In this case, Caudill wasn't pointing out a particular flaw. He had built something new. Funny thing about the internet. Once an idea is out there, it tends to remain out there. So even if the feds or someone else convinced Caudill that his talk was not in the interests of national security, it seemed likely that someone else would create a new device, and that's exactly what happened. Proxyham is a very remote access point. Using it is much like putting a Wi-Fi transmitter in your home or office, except that the person using and controlling Proxyham could be up to a mile away. The Wi-Fi transmitter uses a 900 MHz radio to connect to an antenna dongle on a computer as far as 2.5 miles away. So in the case of Ross Ulbricht, the FBI could have been amassing outside the Glen Park Library while he was in someone's basement doing laundry several blocks away. The need for such devices is clear if you live in an oppressed country. Contacting the outside world through Tor is a risk many take. This kind of device would add another layer of security by masking the geolocation of the requester. Except someone didn't want Caudill to speak about it at DEF CON. In interviews, Caudill denied that the Federal Communications Commission had discouraged him. Wired speculated that secretly planting a Proxyham on someone else's network might be interpreted as unauthorized access under America's draconian and vague Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Caudill refuses to comment on any of the speculation. As I said, once an idea is out there, anyone can run with it. So, security researcher Sami Kamkar created Proxy Gambit, a device that essentially replaces Proxyham, except it uses reverse cellular traffic, meaning that instead of your being only a few miles from the device when you use it, you could be halfway across the world. Cool. Proxy Gambit and devices like it will, of course, create headaches for law enforcement when criminals decide to use them. Ulbricht's Silk Road was an online drug emporium. It was not something you could search for on Google. It was not on what's called the surface web, which can easily be indexed and searched. The surface web, containing familiar sites like Amazon and YouTube, represents only 5% of the entire internet. All the websites most of you have been to or know about make up a trivial number compared to the actual number of sites out there. The vast majority of internet sites are actually hidden from most search engines. After the surface web, the next biggest chunk of the internet is what's called the deep web. This is the part of the web that is hidden behind password access. For example, the contents of the card catalog for the Glen Park branch of the San Francisco Public Library. The deep web also includes most subscription-only sites and corporate intranet sites. Netflix, Pandora, you get the idea. Finally, there is a much smaller piece of the internet known as the dark web. This part of the internet is not accessible through an ordinary browser, nor is it searchable on sites such as Google, Bing, and Yahoo. The dark web is where Silk Road lived, alongside sites where you can hire an assassin and acquire child pornography. Sites like these live on the dark web because it is virtually anonymous. I say virtually because nothing truly ever is. Access to the dark web can be gained only through a Tor browser. In fact, dark web sites with complicated alphanumeric URLs all end with .onion. As I mentioned earlier, the Onion router was created by the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory to give oppressed people a way to contact each other as well as the outside world. I've also explained that Tor does not connect your browser directly to a site. Rather, it establishes a link to another server, which then attaches to another server to finally reach the destination site. The multiple hops make it harder to trace. And sites such as Silk Road are the products of hidden services within the Tor network. Their URLs are generated from an algorithm, and lists of dark web sites change frequently. Tor can access both the surface web and the dark web. Another dark web browser, I2P, can also access the surface web and dark web. Even before the takedown of Silk Road, people speculated that the NSA or others had a way to identify users on the dark web. One way for the NSA to do that would be to plant and control what are called exit nodes, the points at which an internet request is passed to one of these hidden services, although that still wouldn't allow identification of the initial requester. To do that, the government observer would have to see that a request was made to access site X and that a few seconds earlier, someone in New Hampshire fired up the Tor browser. The observer might suspect that the two events were related. Over time, access to the site and repeated access to Tor around the same time could establish a pattern. One way to avoid creating that pattern is to keep your Tor browser connected at all times. In Ulbricht's case, he got sloppy. Ulbricht apparently didn't have a plan early on. In his initial discussions of Silk Road, he alternated between using his real email address and a pseudonymous one. As you can see, it is very hard to operate in the world today without leaving traces of your true identity somewhere on the internet. But as I said at the outset, with a little bit of care, you too can master the art of invisibility. In the following pages, I will show you how.